To visitors from afar, Frank San, Bidé, Aaron San, from the Northwest, welcome. I think last time I talked about the slight discrepancy, is that right? I think that's right. Of course, y'all won't remember, but I think that's what I talked about. There's an old verse which came to my mind. Actually, only a piece of it came to my mind. And in fact, I think a piece that I edited unintentionally, but it's from the verses. Written by great ancestor Dongshan. Ancestral source of our lineage. Anyway, he wrote some verses and maybe more than just verses, commentary on the rather abstruse teaching of the five ranks, which you've probably all heard of anyway, I suspect. Anybody not heard of the five ranks? Okay. Right. Well, that's pretty good. Anyway, for some reason, just this piece of the verse on the first rank. Anyway. Some people don't care for the translation of the term ranks for the Chinese character yi, perhaps yi in Japanese. So some people wind up saying things like the five relative positions of absolute and the commonplace, the view of things. So absolute and relative. And I should have looked this up, but I was once again fairly ill last night, so I gave myself a break and decided that my experience of Dharma talk is it's okay as it is. It's you know, probably not going to win any awards, if there are any awards being given. But my experience is something like there are. There's an enormous variety of what might be called seeds for a talk, almost really limitless variety. And the seeds need to be, so to speak, watered or cultivated from the body-mind experience of the speaker. So this is how it feels to me. There are, of course, other ways of approaching giving a Dharma talk, but this is the only approach that feels trustworthy to me. So the seed that emerged in my mind from somewhere is something like well, it involves, the actual verse involves an old lady who gets up at midnight, you know, to use the toilet or something, and it's dark. It's the deep dark of midnight, and maybe she's in the bathroom and there's a mirror. And she sees a face in the mirror. The way the verse kind of turned in my mind, she kind of recognizes the face. That is, the face is kind of familiar, but she can't recall the name. So that's the sense of the verse, anyway. And the suggestion is that the face will always look kind of familiar to all of us. But it may be some while before we recall the name. If there were a larger audience, I might feel like asking, do you understand? It's more fun if there's a larger audience. If it's a small audience, what do you mean? I don't know. Feels unfriendly. Which is not my intention.
I don't understand why we need to remember their name.
Well, I guess I didn't say need.
Oh, no, you didn't say need.
But if you almost, you recognize that, oh, I see that face, but who is that? I don't know that one's name. You might want to, but maybe not. Of course, I think the old lady just, you know, does whatever business she had to do and goes back to bed. And that's okay too. But eventually she may recognize the face and recall the name. I'm going to make a long leap here and say, in Western esotericism, that's known as coming to the knowledge of and conversation with your holy guardian angel. Same thing. The Holy Guardian Angel, of course, has manifested various incarnations over the centuries, including, if you grew up a little Catholic child, you encountered many pictures of usually sweet little children, in those days white children invariably, and they would be like crossing the street, or they're out in the forest, and behind them is this benevolent winged luminous creature who is sort of reaching out to them and making sure they don't cross against the light, etc. So that's one picture of the Holy Guardian Angel, but in the Western esoteric traditions, that's not what's meant. Also, it's kind of like what Carl Jung might call the manifestation of the archetype of the self, which is capital S. So these are all in the same deeply forested, mysterious territory. But they all are. So to recognize and achieve conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel is to remember the name. I think, if I'm right, that this is associated with the so-called first rank or first relative position. This is known as the relative within the absolute. Probably also heard of the theory of like the multiverse. So if there's such a thing as a multiverse, there are these like bubbles of phenomenal universes floating around, perhaps limitless number. And each one is like a relative world. And the whole ocean maybe we call that something like the absolute. So each of us has a vantage point on the relative world. And that relative world is buoyed up in what we can tentatively call the absolute. So how do we practice in such a way that there isn't the slightest discrepancy? Such that our practice is consistent from the point of view of the relative within the absolute. The second rank, by the way, is the absolute within the relative. So I've so far thrown everything into this talk with the kitchen sink. So maybe I won't throw anything else in there. But I was going to suggest that our style of practice is consistent with a reality vaguely like what I'm describing, or what some of our ancestral teachers have described. So here we are, kind of relative beings in a sea of the absolute, pardon, the absolute world. And our experience is often very like, William James said, the psychologist William James said, a baby encounters the world anew as what he called a blooming, buzzing confusion. And poor little Tyke can look forward to try and sort that out the rest of his or her or their life. So there's kind of a level that I think I also referred to before of a sort of a blooming, buzzing noise, like a room full of people at a cocktail party. It's kind of me. There's also a whole body mind that is, speaking in silence. So above we have the cocktail party, and the rest of the body is silent, but also full of vitality. So one way to practice when we're out and about is to notice how easy it is to kind of be drawn into the cocktail party conversation and forget about the vital silence of the body mind. So we can kind of sidestep the cocktail party, like going out onto the balcony there where there isn't anyone else. And noticing the, for example, the quiet evening while the conversation is still going on somewhere else. This is actually very easy to do. And when we're out and about, walking around in the busy city, it's fun to do. So quite possible to negotiate our way around the neighborhood without really taking much stock of the inner monologue, and simply enjoying how the body feels moving, how the breath feels. It's a restful kind of practice, especially if we've been very busy, you know. It's good to set that gently aside and appreciate the silent vitality of the body. And I would suggest that that sort of practice, as long as, you know, we're not trying to rack up points, is consistent with gazing into the midnight mirror at that familiar face and, well, maybe one day remembering the name, which we've all always known. So if I make my customary trip to Oakland this afternoon to share pizza and beer with my friends, I will be also kind of cultivating this practice I'm describing. On BART or wherever I am. And of course, in a way, this is nothing so special. Maybe it's similar to what you all do all the time. So good. If not, you might see, you can adopt that perspective and, well, just see what happens. Well, Jonathan kindly prepared tea and cookie for us, cookies, so we won't let that go to waste. But in the meantime, are there any comments or questions? Oh, yes, Doan-san.
It just reminded me that so a few weeks ago I went up to Gilroy thinking I was going to have a certain, you know, plethora of garlic dishes and go to antique stores, but they were closed. But this new person in my life is obsessed with blow molds.
With what?
Blow molds, those plastic things at the holidays that sit in people's front yards
from
like the 50s and beyond.
Okay.
Warm and gentle light that they put on. So
indeed. They have illumination inside.
Yeah, like a light bulb. But they kind of, you know, mute the light, I guess, in a way that's very kind of cozy.
Oh, yes.
And there was a snowman and a penguin that had to be seen in person, so we went back again last week to go away. Also, the place I wanted to go that had the soup and the ice cream and the garlic, you know, entree was warm. So we went back to make sure we had all the courses of garlic.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I was sort of just having a wonderful time. This new person in my life was thrilled because there were tons of used books and used records. So everyone's in a happy, joyful mode. And they came around the corner and I saw a picture that I'd forgotten about that was always in my room as a child. And kind of a popular print. You may have even seen it before. It's these two children that are kind of leaning off a bridge over kind of a fast moving stream trying to grab a flower. And there's a guardian angel.
There you are. Right.
And when I asked earlier about needing to know the name, I was obsessed with who the little kids were, but I never really thought, like, who's that handsome angel guy in the back? I think it's just, guardian angel doing what guardian angels do. But that image used to come to me a lot whenever something would almost take me out, whether it be a car accident or I had a fire, kitchen fire incident once where I almost lit our house on fire and it was averted. And I just remember it was that image coming back of that, that print, which I think is pretty popular. I think it was kind of mass produced. But that reminded me of that.
And there were many versions of that too.
But I have the other thing I was going to say is I have this morbid thing that's a little, and I'm sure I was trained in these Zen houses of Zen to think about this. I do often pause sometimes and think just trying to be quiet and absorb the moment because it's unrepeatable and I'll be dead soon. So why don't we appreciate that? But it shouldn't be, 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, 1 year. This isn't going to happen again. So I should maybe just soak it all in.
So how come Zen doesn't encourage the visualization? Like in other practices, visualization is very important, right? Even Tibetan Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
But in Zen, it's like hardly spoken.
Yeah.
Why is it?
Well, there's so many things in the ocean of Dharma. There's so many. And there are also currents, different streams. Suzuki Roshi suggested that maybe, if you're always thinking, what's the next interesting stream? It's kind of tiring. So he suggested, how about one stream all the way? So if that stream involves the tantra visualization, then do that. If not, well, then do what's there for you to do. But if you want to try all those other things, great. It's fine. It is all dharma. It all has the taste of liberation, we're told. I think that's what I see. I trust that.
Have you ever had an organic visualization happen once your mind's so quiet, especially during the retreat? It's rather you not doing it, it just happens.
Yeah, it wasn't not so much like a mandala, maybe not quite that organized. I told you about my possibly experience of former lives. I mentioned that happened during retreat and some of the things, but don't necessarily talk about them so much.
Was that the covered wagon?
I don't remember that it was covered, but there was a wagon. Yeah.
We were walking wagon.
A big horse-drawn wagon.
Right?
And it was hot and dusty, which I didn't like. Anyway. Yes.
I don't know if I have a point here, but I liked there were things that you mentioned that really connected in a way for me about walking around the city and also the cocktail party kind of conversation and how I feel like that's a really helpful practice that I sometimes just kind of spontaneously do, but a lot of what goes on, like walking around, is this kind of self-consciousness of how I appear to people or the kind of approach I need to have in certain interactions or, things that might happen. And there's this kind of reinforcing of the self that's going on, just walking around, even not talking to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't have a specific, like, this is how I have to be, but it just sort of, it's from experience or whatever. But, mm-hmm. But that also, the image of seeing the face and maybe not recognizing the name, that feels related because, all of that kind of self-consciousness is really unnecessary and probably unhelpful and it can be dropped. And that's, something I think I need to practice some more.
Experiment with, to me, that thread of self-consciousness feels like one of the conversations in the cocktail party.
Mm-hmm.
And I can kind of step away from that. You know, excuse me, I'm going to go have a canapé over here while you guys are talking.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be done without turning it into a struggle. You know? This is actually very gentle and quite easy. Some people get frustrated if they don't find that they can forever forget the cocktail party, you know? It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. You can find yourself wandering in and out of various rooms, and you can always return to the balcony, even if only for a little while. It's worth it. Yes, John?
Thich Nhat Hanh says something like, you come back to your true home, which is your body breath. Present moment or something like that.
Something like that
reminds me of that, where that's you're accessing that that's really is always with you.
Yep.
It's not like the cocktail party isn't going on.
Right.
But it's to be grounding to notice that at least.
Yes. Quite. Yeah. Cute.
Close.
Coming to the talk,
mm-hmm.
being patient while I water various random seeds. Thank you very much.
This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.